If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
The Sound Podcast is proud to be part of the Osiris Podcast family, a growing community of music and cultural podcasts connecting music fans like you with conversation, commentary, and of course, music. For more, visit osirispod.com. The show starts now.
Thank you.
You've been listening to River from Electric Beethoven from their 2017 record, Maps We Found in the Ground. For the uninitiated, Electric Beethoven is a project initiated by Reed Mathis, a West Coast bass playing legend, who thought it would be interesting to improvise over Beethoven's work. While Mathis has been involved in several projects the last few years, I get the impression this one is the most meaningful to him. So it's with that sentiment that I was intrigued to hear that Electric Beethoven was releasing new material on new label, Color Red. In fact, the plan is to release new songs once a month until an entire record is ready. So it's with that renewed interest in the project that I caught up with a fascinating and talented Reed Mathis. Our conversation started when I asked Reed if the time was right, given his busy schedule, for new material.
The first record I put out was not like a touring band. It was like a mixtape where every track was a different lineup of players, and like where we only came together for like one day and made that track. And it definitely wasn't like a team, you know. And then for the last couple of years, I've had, these guys where we've been touring it and improvising and like really pushing each other and learning from each other and becoming more like each other, which is what makes a good team, you know? And so it was really important to me to document that and make a record that wasn't so much about me. It was more about this four-headed organism and the dynamics that we create together. So that was kind of my main impetus. And, you know, we tracked it that way.
You did put out Maps We Found in the Ground after the first release. And I think that that band, which features... I think that the band that is on this new release, which includes yourself, Todd Stoops on electric organ and keyboard, and Clay Welch on electric guitar, and Josh Raymer on everything percussion, including drums and drum machine, that is the band that was on Maps We Found in the Ground, right?
Almost. Jay Lane was on drums for Maps We Found in the Ground.
Okay.
So Josh Raymer joined us later. Maps We Found on the Ground was actually one of our first live shows. It was like gig number 10 or something. So that was like pretty early on, and it was like, I don't know, we were just so excited that it was actually working and coming to life. We were playing material from the first record on that live album. So for this new round, we recorded like all new, you know, new to us stuff. And like the other change I made was, you know, on the first round we did like some Beethoven pieces that meant a lot to me growing up, and like that were just real special to me personally, but they weren't like really that famous,
right?
They were kind of more like deep cuts. And maybe here and there, there'd be a snatch of melody that people would recognize. But for the most part, I don't think anyone recognized what we were doing. So for this round, I picked all Beethoven songs that are, like, famous. And, like, all songs that people would recognize, you know. So I don't want to give anything away because we're going to be releasing them one at a time.
Right.
And I don't want necessarily to tell the audience right now what is coming. But the one we put out in the last month is, you know, the first movement from the Fifth Symphony, which, you know, everybody knows. It's pretty iconic. You know. But also everybody knows the disco version, which, yeah, it's like you chuckle because it's like a little bit ironic, you know, how they deliver it. And I was wanting to play it not ironic.
That's from the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, right?
Exactly,
right,
yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yep. And it's a cool track, you know. It's awesome, and it makes you dance, whatever. But, you know, this is not the disco era, and I don't want what we're doing to be a novelty. So, you know, we tried to play it just, like, actually with some soul, you know? Our real feelings.
And the plan is to release one track a month for a series of months and then release the entire album. Is that correct?
That is the plan. Exactly. Yeah. And I think I want to add a couple before we release the full record. Right now we have 6 tunes done. So I think I want to do 2 more.
Wow.
Before we call it a record. But we'll see if that happens. Even if it's just the 6, it's still a fat record.
Is the plan to play the record of, for lack of a better word, hits at shows, or is the plan to play a little bit of what you've done in the past and to play the hits? I mean, it's like you have a huge canon of music to go to, but I would imagine that. Go ahead.
Yeah, we definitely do have like tons of shit, but you know, we played the stuff from the first record a lot over the last 2 years. So, you know, as with any band, I was listening to a Ryan Montbleu interview a couple days ago, and they were like, "What's your favorite stuff of yours to perform?" And he was like, "Well, I think with almost any artist, your favorite's going to be whatever's most recent, because that's going to be the most representative of who you are now." You know, and he was talking about how some of his most popular songs is stuff he wrote when he was a way younger man, and he still loves those songs, and he loves that they get people off. But, you know, when he sings it, he's conjuring up feelings from a long time ago. Whereas singing your latest song, you don't have to conjure those feelings up. Those are your actual current feelings, you know?
Right, right.
So in much the same way, you know, we'll definitely be playing the newer stuff live. But also, you know, for the practical reason that people know those songs, so they can follow what we're doing a little better, they feel more included, you know. And these arrangements are things that the whole team worked on together. I didn't, like, teach the guys these songs. You know, we together figured out how to adapt them. Whereas, you know, on the first round, I, like, had the whole record done before I even contacted Stoops and Raymer and those guys, you know, so I was very much teaching them that music, whereas now this is something we, all 4 of us, have ownership of. So, you know, yeah, that makes a huge difference in the way we interact, you know, and the way it feels to the audience, I think.
If I remember correctly, a lot of the stuff that you've done in the past with this project was very of the moment, very improvised, and although you had written some of the themes, it was very much up to, you know, Clay and Todd to kind of improvise on what was going on. Now, because these are pieces that you want to attract people who are perhaps a little more familiar with Beethoven and his hits, I would imagine that that improvisation doesn't, there's not as much room to breathe as maybe there had been in the past. Is that accurate?
In a way, yeah. I would say that, I mean, partially because we all 4 worked on these arrangements together. Mm-hmm. Everyone has a little more pride in what we ended up with in the studio, you know? So, I would think that, that sort of feeling of personal connection to what you're doing would be there even without extensive improvising. But I mean, we're improvisers at heart. The whole reason that we're a band is because we like improvising together.
Right.
I mean, we would be a band if we were playing nursery rhymes or if we were playing Grateful Dead songs or whatever. It's not, Beethoven's not the reason we do what we do. That's just the excuse.
Right.
Improvising for dancers is the point and is what we have in common. So that's definitely always permanently a part of it. And when we play these tunes live, they still kind of go long. Not every time, but, you know, the studio versions are, as happens, you know, a little tighter, a little shorter, mm-hmm. a little more focused. And live, I mean, we can go off, you know. And at any point, we can just hit the eject button and, you know, be in freedom land, if anybody feels the need, you know. We're always ready for any one of us to steer, you know.
It is
so,
It is mostly you steering the ship, though, right? I mean, it is kind of your, you know, I know it's a band and everybody's extremely capable. And I mean, it's a hot band, let's be honest. But you are, to a certain degree, steering the ship, no?
I mean, less so, much less so.
Oh, really?
Than I was before, for sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like we all kind of know the drill at this point. And, you know, my intention was for it to be a, how can I put it? Like a living organism that is self-perpetuating. So, you know, I feel like we've achieved that where I don't need to call the shots. The band now actually functions as a whole. Yeah, it's pretty much, I'm not doing very much like directing on stage anymore.
Right.
And I much prefer it that way because these guys are powerhouses, you know, and they have like super strong instincts that are different than mine. And, you know, when they're able to have equal authorship, then I get to learn, then I get to expand and be challenged, you know, so. It's in a really healthy place.
The plan is to obviously take this record on the road and what you're doing on the road. When do you hope to do that? When do you hope to expose people to what's going on with the new version?
We are looking at touring starting back up in like June.
Mm-hmm.
That is our plan for right now, and to basically go for the rest of the year.
Wow. I'm curious about the switch to Color Red, because it seems like this is a very cool label for you to be on, and they are doing cool things, and you kind of do this project, at least from what I see, seems to fit this notion of, you know, some of the remixes and some of the kind of artists that they have on the label in a pretty cool way. What made you decide to go to Color Red, or did they seek you out?
A little bit of both. Basically, I'm just a huge Eddie Roberts fan. I have been ever since I met him. You know, when I first saw him play, saw the new Master Sounds and saw him with Robert Walter, I was pretty intimidated by him because he's a really confident fellow, and he's always like super well-dressed and well-put-together. He presents himself as the real badass. So, yeah, Eddie used to be kind of an imposing figure to me, but then I did some gigs with him and Johnny Vidakovich as a trio.
Wow.
And Johnny, I've known for a long time, totally puts me at ease. So as I got to know Eddie, I realized that he's not an intimidating figure. He's actually a total sweetheart. And over the years, we've just become better and better friends and have more and more mutual respect. So when he was starting up this label, he brought it up to me that he thought it would be a good fit. And I thought about it for about 10 seconds and said, yes, please. Because I just really believe in him. He's not only an outstanding musician and person, but he's a pretty outstanding businessman. He has a great head for business and for the parts of the industry that are not pure music. You know, he knows a lot about publishing side. He knows a lot about just record labels, and he's keeping abreast of the sort of moment to moment evolution of what digital distribution is, which I don't keep up with that. I mean, to me, it just seems like sort of a chaotic Wild West situation,
right,
you know, on the internet. And you know, him and his partner, Zach, are experts in the very latest in digital distribution, and they have a real vision, and they have a lot of drive, and they really want to create a label in the old school sense of it being a collective of artists, like the Motown label was, you know, like Blue Note back in the day, where it's like a collective of artists that all kind of cooperate and help each other with different projects. And it's a huge honor to be a part of it, and to be they're putting out such quality stuff. They have this playlist on Spotify, just Color Red Music, that every time they release something, they add it to the playlist. So the first thing on the playlist is always the latest release.
Right.
And then it just kind of chronologically goes back in time until Matador Soul Sounds, the first thing they put out. And I just put that thing on and hit shuffle, and I just can't believe the quality that they're putting out. And they record everything at this house in Denver in the basement with, like, super cool analog gear, record everything to tape, and all the instruments are in the same room together. There's, like, bleed in all the mics, you know. And it's awesome, you know. It's just, they're getting really authentic stuff, and even when it has modern production, it's modern production built on top of the foundation of, you know, classic soul records. So it's kind of amazing, actually, to work with them. I mean, like, you know, we brought in these tunes and we recorded them, but for the first time in my career, I'm not mixing the shit.
Right.
We're basically, there are so many good producers in the Color Red family that every track I'm giving to a different producer. Jeff Franca, the drummer from Thievery Corporation, mixed The Fish, which he knocked it out of the park. It's such a dreamy soundscape, and the drums are just bumping.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie Roberts himself mixed our next single, which comes out March 12th, I think.
Yes.
And Eddie's mix is friggin' superb. He did it in like 2 hours. I couldn't believe how quickly the turnaround was. So it's like even the mixing is a collective effort. So it's just a real honor to be a part of it. You know, it takes someone like Eddie to make that happen. You know, somebody with the vision and the skill set and the charisma to like gather people around them and have everybody believe in a common goal. So that's a huge honor.
If we can take off the electric Beethoven hat for a second and just talk about Reed Mathis, what's your preference? Is your preference really to stick with bass and dabble in guitar? I mean, you're such an accomplished player on bass that I would imagine when you pick up a guitar, it's a totally different experience for you, but you've been doing it a lot lately, at least over the last year. And so I'm curious about which you prefer or which you'd like to know as your main, you know, be known for as your main instrument at this point.
Oh, I mean, I'll definitely always be a bassist.
Right.
First and foremost. But honestly, to me, they're not different.
Wow.
You know, I've been told my whole life that I play bass, quote unquote, like a guitar.
Right.
You know, and I always took issue with that, because I was like, well, I'm not doing it like anything. I'm just playing it how I play it. I'm not doing it like something, you know, I'm doing it like me, you know? But people always kind of took it as like, oh, he plays bass like it's a guitar. But to me, all the instruments are one thing, you know, and, the actual physical technique of playing the instrument is identical. I mean, the bass is short for bass guitar. It is a guitar. It's not a bass violin. It's a bass guitar, you know? So,
yep.
I mean, so to me, it's not really a different thing, but it does play a different role, typically.
Yes.
And that's just fun to explore. And I just got my first electric guitar. I've never owned an electric guitar before, so
wow.
That's pretty fun, and it's been fun like fucking with it and playing around and just playing at Terrapin a lot with it. And Robert Walter hired me to play guitar with him in January, and yeah, I mean, that's cool, but to me it's not a different thing. It's not like it's not, I know to other people it's like a big change, but to me it's absolutely no different at all.
Wow. I guess if you're very talented, it's probably not a big deal at all. I'm also curious about another project that I haven't specifically heard, and I'd like to, and we can talk about how I'm going to do that after, but talk to me a bit about Bone Diggers, the Songs of Paul Simon, because this is an extremely intriguing project, and I think it's it's kind of one of those things that you do as, you know, one-offs and mostly around where you live, But talk to me about the inspiration to tackle the songs of Paul Simon as only you and Lebo and Rager can.
Yeah, thanks for asking. I mean, it happened on accident because there's a beautiful venue in the Mission in San Francisco called The Chapel. And we had an Electric Beethoven show there. And then we got booked to play at the Outside Lands Festival, like the same month. And the Outside Lands Festival had in their contract that we couldn't play in the same region, you know, within like 3 weeks of the event or something, which is kind of standard. You know, festivals don't want your fans to go see you at a club. They want them to buy tickets to the festival.
Right.
So makes sense. But we basically had to make this call, like, do we say no to Outside Lands because we have the gig at the Chapel, or do we bail on the Chapel so we can do this prestigious festival wish? And my manager, Benji, came up with a genius idea, which is about we do Electric Beethoven at Outside Lands and you keep the night at the Chapel but do something else. And I was like, well, what would I do? And he was like, I don't know, what do you want to do? And I thought about it for a minute, and my first thought was, you know, just something that's so common around here these days, which is like, well, let's just get some great players and we'll do a night of Grateful Dead, you know?
Right.
Because that is, in effect, doing a jazz show. You know, you're basically getting musicians together that know the same songs and the audience knows the songs, and you improvise and you be yourself. And so that was my first thought. And then I was like, nah, kind of like everybody's doing that, you know? What is some other music we could do that same approach with? And I was hanging out with Lebo at the time, and we had just been talking about Paul Simon, like, earlier that night. And I was like, why don't we just do Paul Simon, you know? I mean, and we were like, Lebo was like, well, there's not really a lot of jamming in that music. And I was like, well, there's not a lot of jamming in that music yet. But what if we treat them like jazz songs, or what if we treat them like Grateful Dead songs, where you're expected to jam, you're expected to come up with a new part, you're expected to have a fresh take, you're expected to be yourself and have an authentic viewpoint, rather than try to sound like a Paul Simon record, you know? Let's just sound like ourselves and jam and take solos and experiment with the groove and do what we do, you know?
Yeah.
So Lebo was down. The venue was stoked. I got a bunch of great players together, some of the Beethoven guys and some of the TV Green guys, and Nathan Moore showed up, and it was an amazing night. And to my surprise, it like packed out the venue. Like it was a huge success. I kind of expected it to just be like a whatever show because we didn't really promote it and it wasn't an established project.
Right.
But man, it was like it went off. The dance floor was going crazy. The whole audience was singing along. I was like, this is like a thing, you know? And at the end of the night, we were just like, we should do this again, probably, you know? It took us a minute, but then we did another show at a different club in San Francisco, also packed, also went off. And then we were like, this is like a thing. This is serious, you know, because the Paul Simon songbook kind of, it takes everybody back to their childhood. It's like really comforting music. Well, at the same time, there's a lot to chew on. It's like the lyrics are incredible poetry, similar to Robert Hunter or John Barlow. And, you know, you can live a whole life in the lyrics, you know. And then Paul Simon's songwriting from a instrument standpoint, there's a lot to chew on there, too. The rhythms are exciting. The chord progressions are exciting. Me as a singer, I get to, like, I don't sing his melodies. I improvise melodies, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So basically we're just having our way with this songbook that that a lot of people have in common that makes everybody feel really good. I mean, everybody kind of likes Paul Simon, so it's a good meeting point.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So after we saw the audience response, we were like, oh, we should do this more. So we're actually looking at a bunch of shows in the second half of 2019 all over the country.
How do you keep it all straight? I mean, I realize they're gigs, and I realize at this point you've been playing the Beethoven stuff quite a bit, and now you've been playing the Paul Simon stuff a bit, but you're also in that Golden Gate wingman thing. I mean, you are, you know, a pretty busy guy who has to play in all kinds of different situations. How do you keep it all straight?
I feel like I don't keep it all straight. Well, the simple answer is that I don't behave differently in different situations.
Right.
I'm not learning any of this music. I've known Paul Simon's songs since I was 11. You know, I mean, my Uncle John, who taught me most of the fundamentals of music, I mean, Paul Simon was like his favorite shit. So, you know, a lot of my first sort of instruction in music used Paul Simon and Led Zeppelin and the Beatles as the example.
Right.
So I've known most of the Paul Simon music like since I was a middle schooler, on the guitar, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really learning that. I'm not, you know, I mean, it's just not that hard is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
And you know, all those situations are like with good friends, you know, the Golden Gate Wingman guys are like dear friends and know them forever. And Lebo I've known forever. And the Beethoven guys I've known forever. I mean, three of the four guys in Electric Beethoven are from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Like we grew up together, you know?
Right.
So, it's just, it's not as hard as it looks. That's basically right. What I'm trying to say. The hard part is all the traveling and figuring out like financial stuff. That's the hard part.
Right.
And like keeping your sanity and your physical health together when you're in so many different situations all the time. And, when your schedule's not consistent, and, that's the challenging thing. The music is the easy part. The music is the reward for having done all the hard part, actually, you know?
Yeah. As a bass player, though, you are part of the rhythm section, and so you are playing with...
I disagree.
Oh, okay.
I think all instruments are the rhythm section.
Fair. Okay.
Including vocals. The whole thing is the rhythm section. I've never subscribed to the thought that bass and drums are the rhythm section and the other people aren't. To me, the entire thing is gears that, you know, overlay on each other. And, you know, you could have the funkiest drummer and bass player in the world. If the other guys don't have rhythm, it's going to sound awful. Like, it's not like the bass player and the drummer have to have rhythm and the other people don't, you know?
Yeah.
All the instruments have to be equally good at rhythm.
The only question I was going to ask about it was that you are playing with different drummers that play very differently, from the way Jay hits to the way Johnny Vidakovich plays to, you know, all of these different people. And while I agree that they are all, the band is a sum of the parts, you are to a certain degree driving. And so... Is that weird for you, or is it just something that you also have become accustomed to because you've played with all of these different players so much at this point?
That's never been tricky for me,
right?
Because I feel like the core of this music, this like American music, whatever you call it. I mean,
mm-hmm.
We're all referencing the same thing, which is our inner organs, what it actually feels like to have a human body. That's where all this music comes from. You know, the heartbeat and the circulation and the breath. I mean, that's what we're all doing on our instruments.
Right.
And that's not different from person to person. We don't have radically different types of hearts and types of lungs. Like, we're all sharing the human experience. And, you know, and like I said a minute ago, I mean, I feel like every instrument is equally the rhythm section.
Right.
And so, you know, I tend to play with musicians who play a combination of like soul and rock and jazz.
Yeah.
And you know, we're all basically coming from the same tradition. So it's not like I'm suddenly in a metal band, You know, like,
right.
Like, I mean, yeah, it's like these, everybody has their own traits, but we're not, I'm not like, jumping radically from style to style. I mean, I treat every gig as the same thing, which is, everybody being their authentic self.
Right.
And that's not a genre.
Right.
You know, there's not a right way to do that. There's a right way to play rock. There's a right way to play funk, but there's not a right way to be yourself. And so I just treat every gig as an opportunity to allow other people to be authentic and to be authentic myself. And that's just one skill that applies to all people. You know, you don't have to change that for a different drummer, because the whole point is that they get to be themselves. You get to be yourself. And that's what gives it value. I mean, you know, I mean, let's face it, if we're not going to, you know, make huge piles of money and like have that be the goal of being an artist, if what is the goal? The goal, what gives it value? What gives it meaning? It's the authenticity. It's the self-acceptance. It's the giving permission in public for people to be who they are. You know, that's what this is all about, is building connection, creating a space where connection can happen. You know, it's, that's what gives what we're doing meaning. And, you know, if I were to try to be a quote unquote good bass player, you know, and play a style correctly, I would be devaluing the whole thing.
Right.
In my opinion.
Do you practice a lot? I mean, between gigs, are you always practicing, or is it just something that you'd rather be in the moment for? Or, like, what's that process like? Because
I used to practice a shitload, like, in the 90s.
Right.
But nowadays, honestly, I practice probably, like, once a month.
Hmm.
And, you know, usually with a pretty specific goal. Like if I'm on a gig and I find myself stumbling over something, like I basically just practice to correct physical problems.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like if my hands don't do something right, then the next day I'll pick up the instrument and be like, what was that thing that kept fucking me up last night? You know,
mm-hmm.
And I'll figure out what it was. I'll isolate it. And then I'll kind of invent a little exercise that forces my body to do it over and over. And, you know, and then I'll do it slowly for a while and gradually speed it up until it's effortless. And, you know, but honestly, I don't even do that very often anymore. Although I have to say, lately I've been doing something I have not done since 8th grade.
What's that?
which is trying to learn and perfect a very specific, like, showpiece on the bass that isn't improvised, and, you know, it's like a set piece that is, like, designed to push my technique as far as it'll go.
Huh.
And so if I can get it together, it'll be one of the tracks on the Beethoven record. And I there's no reason why I shouldn't. It, only if I'm lazy will I not get it together.
But right.
I'm going to Denver in 3 weeks. And I'm hoping to go into Color Red and record this solo bass piece. And so, yeah, I've been working on like a actually set piece that is like physically nearly impossible for me to play, and just pushing myself to do it. And that's been really intense. I mean, it reminds me of being a kid, you know.
Well,
cool.
You'll have to put down the social media. You are so prolific on social media. About
you think so? Oh my god!
About all the shows like you go to. Oh no, man! All the show. You're always introducing people. I mean, you're a great follow because of all the musicians that you're introducing people to and letting people know about your gigs. I think you do a great job. I really enjoyed watching the the Dylan
Thank
induction
you.
Of Gordon Lightfoot. Gordon is a hero in this country, and Dylan it was so not into being there. It was kind of weird.
I mean, I'm sure he's into Gordon, but that kind of like pomp and circumstance of that kind of event,
yeah,
I could just see it making his skin crawl. You know, I'm sure
totally.
He would have way rather like given Gordon an award like at someone's home over a nice meal, you know, with like 10 friends. I mean, that would be more Dylan style. Putting on a suit and getting cameras and lights and makeup. I mean, I'm sure he was, by the time it was time to go on stage, he was probably like, get me out of here.
Yeah.
He's just not a, he's not a celeb. He doesn't dig that, you know, he doesn't want that kind of attention. He never has. He, as soon as he became a celebrity, he started being a
reckless,
messing with every interviewer he was in front of. He like hated it.
Right.
And not because he's an asshole. It's because that's not what he got into music for. He doesn't want it to be about him. He doesn't want it to be about your image or your reputation. He just wants it to be about songs, you know? And so I loved that clip. I was just like, yeah, man, he does not give a shit. Like, he's just up there like, yeah, this sucks.
I actually saw Gordon Lightfoot. He was seated a few rows beside me at a Dylan and Phil and Friends show here in Toronto. So that kind of put the two and two together for me watching that clip. I guess that was like, I don't know, like probably 20 years ago already. It seems like forever ago. But
I remember when Dylan and Phil and Friends were touring. It was like 98,
yeah.
I think.
Wow, it is 20
because,
years
ago. Because a friend of mine in Oklahoma went down to Dallas to see them. So, yeah.
Wow. Cool. We're getting old, man. This is not good.
It's true. It's fine. It's fine.
Thanks so much for the music you make. It's so inspiring that, you know, you can think intellectually about this stuff, play authentically with this stuff, and really offer up something completely different. And I appreciate it, and I'm sure the audience does too. So thanks for this, and we'll be watching for more Electric Beethoven and everything else you're doing, man. Thank you.
Ira, thank you so much, and thank you for what you do. This I'm addicted to podcasts and interviews with artist types and performers, and so, you know, I listen to your show tons. I'm really honored to be part of it. Thank you so much.
We always cover a lot of territory whenever Reed is on the show. That's a good thing, I think. He's so great, and his bandmates in this Electric Beethoven project bring so much talent to the table that, well, we just have to cover it. Not to mention the fact that they've joined Color Red under the guidance of Eddie Roberts. It's all very exciting, and we're pretty excited for this month's new release on March 12th. You can get all the details on the ongoing project at reedmathis.com or at color-red.co. Before we leave you, why not listen to The Fifth, an energetic piece of music inspired by Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, and stay tuned following The Fifth for a special performance of Reed Mathis and the Bone Diggers from Chico, California, May 24th, 2018, and their performance of the Paul Simon classic, American Tune.
many is the time I've been mistaken, and many times confused. Yes, and I've often felt forsaken, and certainly misused. Oh, but I'm all right. I'm all right. I'm just weary to my bones. Still, you don't expect to be bright and bon vivant so far away from home. So far away from home. And I don't know a soul who's not been battered. I don't have a friend who feels at ease. I don't know of a dream that's not been shattered or driven to its knees. Oh, but we're all right. We're all right. You know that we've lived so well, so long. Still, when I think of the road we're traveling on, I wonder what's gone wrong. Can't help it, I wonder what's gone wrong. I dreamed I was dying. I dreamed that my soul rose up unexpectedly, and looking back down at me, smiled reassuringly. And I dreamed I was dying. Then I dreamed I was flying and high up above. My eyes could clearly see the Statue of Liberty sailing the way to sea. I dreamed I was flying. Well, we came on the ship they called the Mayflower. We came on the ship that sailed to the moon. We came at the age's most uncertain hour. And sing our American tune. Oh, yes, we're trying to get some rest. That's all, I'm trying to get some rest. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, you guys. Good night.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit OsirisPod.com. Thanks for listening. Osiris.